SpringFest means more sun, more fun, and more free at Lowe's. Keep your yard in line with an additional free Ego 56-volt battery when you buy a select Ego mower, trimmer, or blower. Plus, keep landscaping fresh with Stay-Green 1-cubic-foot garden soil, 5 bags for $10. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 4A. While supplies last, selection varies by location. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
The Executive Chair on News Talk.
And for the time that's in it, let's say, I'm delighted to welcome to the programme Richard Tierney. He's the CEO of the St. Patrick's Festival. Richard, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Bobby. Delighted to be here.
Now, we'll talk all about the festival in a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about one Richard Tierney, a D4 man from Sandymount. Basically tried third level, but didn't really like it and ended up working his way to the top of an ad agency. Tell us about your early years. Did you tried college, just didn't like it and said, I'm going to earn money here? Or
I kind of was always a little bit not that keen on the academic side of things. While, you know, I kind of did my best, it really wasn't for me. So I'd kind of done a deal with my parents that I would go to college. So I lasted a day. Went to the College of Marketing for a day, and I kind of left at about 4 o'clock, and I said, this ain't going to work. So my poor father, who at the time was from that era where if you didn't go to college, that's it, you might as well emigrate. So I knew someone, David Harvey, you probably know. David Harvey knew someone who owned an ad agency, a marketing agency, and they got me in there, and I started, and I had 8 amazing years there, and you know, ended up being a director and client service director, and
you started making the tea, and
started making the tea and the post, and yeah, packing stuff and putting aprons into post bags, and
So you learned your trade then from the ground up in a busy agency that was the Marketing Network. You then found your way working with Jim Aiken.
Yeah. So my first client when I was in Marketing Network in 1988 was Aiken Promotions. So Marketing Network had them as a client. And before the point was there, the RDS Simmons Court was the venue of choice. And the RDS Simmons Court had no services, so it needed burger vans, 7-Up, you know, various different sponsors and stuff. So that was Marketing Network's task and challenge. So I was put on that account, and I became very close to the Aikens, came very close with Jim, but also in particular his son Peter. And then in 98, when it was time to, when I got an opportunity to leave Marketing Network, I joined Aikens. So it's kind of
And remind us of that time, because it was a real, you know, game changing time for live entertainment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Like, we never really had big bands here in the 70s, 80s. We never had, it was almost like that the world sort of found the entertainment industry in Ireland in the 80s, 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of credit actually does go to Jim Aiken in particularly for getting his bands, particularly wouldn't go to the North. And he worked really hard in the 60s and 70s to get bands and forge relationships with international bands. When I started in with Aikens, I remember somebody telling me that 80% of artists' living was recorded music and 20% was live. I think that's totally flipped the other way today.
It has completely.
So it was definitely the start of it. But they were amazing times. I mean, it was, you know, I got to see, I mean, amazing acts up close. So no, it was an amazing time.
Yeah. Your commercial instinct, which has always been with you.
Yeah.
Again, you were very much involved in the redevelopment of what was the Point Depot.
Yeah.
And again, I remember the original Point Depot with the restricted view seats and all that.
The leak in the roof.
And they used to put restricted view on the actual ticket.
Yeah.
And you'd say, well, why would you buy a ticket that would have a restricted view?
I think when I was working for Aikens, it was very clear there was real commercial opportunities outside of everything. You know, they were very much focused on selling tickets, but there's a huge amount of opportunities in terms of sponsorship, pouring right deals, etc. So I kind of set up a business in 2001 with that in mind, sort of half knowing what I was doing, but didn't really realize the size and scale of the market. In fairness to Peter Aiken, he was really loyal to me. He was my first client. So I started subbing back into him in terms of commercial work. And then I was fortuitous through Harry Crosby meeting Mike Adamson, who was the CEO of Live Nation at the time in Ireland. And I started working for them, started doing consultancy. And then they hit me with the challenge in 2005 and 6. They wanted to redevelop the Point, but they didn't have the money, so they needed to go and generate sponsorship.
And so, talk to us then about you know, getting sponsorship for things like naming rights, because again, it wasn't something that we were used to.
No.
And the value around, like, yeah, the numbers are absolutely colossal.
I mean, there's some hilarious stories of almost security being called at meetings when we announced how much we were looking for the naming rights. People, that was the budget for the year, never mind the budget for, but we did a lot of, we traveled a lot in the States. We did a lot of research in terms of, because naming rights was very prolific in the States and very successful. So we really worked hard on trying to explain that this is a really good opportunity for brands who had a huge customer base who wanted to retain their loyalty. And that's basically what naming rights is. So
yeah,
you have an advantage over your customer. So O2 would have an advantage over their customer by selling naming rights, or selling, having ticketing deals and stuff like
it,
that.
It sometimes seems to me that, like, obviously if you're one of the companies that goes for a naming right, you've got money to spend. You know, you have, yeah, you're not, anyway, You're flush with money because...
Yeah, but before you feel sorry for them, they ended up probably making a lot of money out of these deals because they're retaining customers. So it's actually very good business.
But what about the tangibility of it? How do you measure it?
Well, you measure it by their success in terms of how they retain customers. I mean, it's you know, people used to say, well, is success if everyone calls it the O2? You know, there's still people that call it the point. Not many. I mean, I'm not sure whether you're going to the Lansdowne
Road. Lansdowne
Road. Are you going
there
to Lansdowne or the Aviva? So... Yeah, I mean, the tangibility is based on the actual financial success, yeah, of the naming right deal, where, you know, you'd argue O2 would probably be making five times more of what they were paying because they were retaining customers and they were stopping customers moving to other, because they were able to offer priority ticketing, you know, and things like that. So, yeah.
So, which leads us nicely on to your current role, which is the CEO of the St. Patrick's Festival.
Yeah.
You were probably, I think this opportunity came for you during COVID, or...
Well, we lights out of COVID.
Had you a difficult COVID?
Well, I mean, being a consultant in the live entertainment business,
yeah,
literally was wiped out overnight.
Right.
I was really lucky that I probably had a load of acorns stashed away. So COVID was actually good for me. It was a chance to reset. I mean, I've told the story many times where my family, you know, we literally picked up school books, pasta and red wine and drove to our house in Kerry and locked ourselves away there for 6 months. And, you know, at one stage, the family kind of said to me, you know, we haven't really spent this much time with you.
Yeah.
And I mean, I watched my business dwindle. I kind of, these things, particularly with naming rights and commercial deals, I'd sort of done, you know, I'd sort of run out of runway a little bit. So this was a huge opportunity. And when it came, I kind of jumped at it with two hands. So,
okay. So the festival as it is, it's a festival, not a day. I'm sure you're anxious to communicate that, which starts at 10 o'clock
now,
today.
Yeah, it starts now, yeah.
And, it's been around since God's time, but the Patrick's Day Festival, it's in danger of being hijacked by a whole load of different groups. It needs to probably stand on its own commercially, which I think is your ethos.
Yeah, so
Richard,
we were set up 30 years ago with probably that in mind, because it was kind of like nobody really owned it. Nobody, it just kind of sort of happened. It's happened for, you know, it's obviously happened for bygone years, forever. So, yeah, I mean, I said I wasn't hired for my good looks, clearly. So, I mean, there was the commercial side of what I was doing in a previous life was very attractive to the St. Patrick's Festival Board of Management. So the plan has been basically is just to become as commercial as we can. We'll always need government support for the National Day.
Yeah.
And we should always have government support for the National Day.
And does financial independence, and I know you're not suggesting that, but I suppose not being a financial burden gives you a much better product, does it not?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it does.
In terms of rowing your own boat.
Of course it does. I mean, of course it does. But I mean, in fairness to our Board of Management and our stakeholders, which are the Government of Ireland, Foljah and DCC, they've bought into this strategic plan in terms of what we're trying to do. And, you know, we're not trying to do a 4-day festival. It's because the day lands on a Tuesday, we have to accommodate the Monday. We're always trying to bring in the weekend. I mean, at the end of the day, St. Patrick's Festival is the start of the tourist season.
Yeah.
So it's really important. We also have millions and millions of eyeballs on us on St. Patrick's Day. So it's really important we put our best foot forward in terms of the cultural expression of what we're trying to do. So in terms of me being able, and the team, we've an amazing team inside, to be able to shape, the more independent we come, I mean, it does make the conversation easier. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're all facing increased costs every year. You know, as we become more, our costs tend to follow. So it's kind of.
So in terms of the parade itself, then it's still a must do opportunity for people to do in Dublin at the weekend. It's great for kids. The city's alive.
No, totally. And I mean, I think in a brief snapshot, we kick off now at 10 o'clock with the treasure hunt. So if anyone listening, there's an amazing treasure hunt to see Dublin. Go to stpatricksfestival.ie. Entries close at 2 o'clock, so there's still room.
It's like the old days.
When I took over the job 4 years ago, I kept getting these emails, will you bring back the treasure hunt? No clue what they were talking about. And it was the nostalgia value of this. This was people who did it with their grandparents. So we've brought it back.
Great.
And I nearly give away the clues every year, so I can't do that. But, and then we're straight into, we've 8 citywide locations around the city with, for the next 3 days, free activity all day long, loads of cool entertainers, amazing street performances, bands, choirs, dancers. Again, go to the website, you'll get the full information there. And then we go into the After Dark program, which is nighttime performances in 3 locations, loads of nightclub activity. And then we move towards the big day, Tuesday, which is, and the parade kicks off at 12 o'clock.
All right. Well, look, every success with it, Richard. As I say, I'll be doing my business in the Patrick's Day parade.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.